Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1 with Opel and the all-new Opel Crossland. Beauty isn't scared of life.
The bad news is that there are no mountains of spare vaccines, according to the Minister for Foreign Affairs, Simon Coveney, speaking to Morning Ireland this morning. Sourcing more vaccines was one of the issues discussed at both the Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael Parliamentary Party meetings last night. Political reporter with the Irish Times, Jack Horgan-Jones, joins us on the line now for more. Good morning, Jack.
Good morning, Claire.
Thanks for joining us. Now, it's important not to raise expectations, according to one government source last night. So just how low should we be keeping our expectations for now?
Certainly not very high. I mean, it wasn't too long ago that we were beating up on the government for a lack of consistency in messaging. And anyone who is hoping for consistency of messaging from the government will be pleased. But anyone who's hoping for consistently good news will be disappointed. The message last night from both Micheál Martin and Leo Varadkar to their parliamentary party meetings was very much one of holding the line, of no rapid or unexpected changes, even as the overall pandemic situation broadly, if slowly, improves. Leo Varadkar told his Fine Gael colleagues that no decision on easing restrictions will be made until the week leading up to April 5th, which is really the earliest we can expect to see even slight relaxation of restrictions. And there was very much a similar message from Micheál Martin, who warned against engaging in speculation and said that the focus needs to be on getting the numbers down for the time being. Both men saying that the emphasis for now really has to be on consolidating the reopening of schools and childcare. So anyone hoping that there's going to be a step change signaled in the weeks ahead, or indeed a step change coming in how we live day-to-day life, as on from April 5th, I think should prepare to be fairly disappointed.
Yeah, because the reality is that nothing really has changed since we went into level 5, bar some of the most vulnerable people being vaccinated.
Well, I'm not sure that's quite the case. Like, we're definitely in a better epidemiological situation, the case counts are lower. But as one person put it to me last night, one senior coalition source said to me, we're out of the dark part of the woods, but we're still very much in the woods. And as you say yourself, that one of the key strands to reopening the vaccination program isn't going anywhere anytime quickly. It's very much slow and steady and mightily unspectacular. Mm-hmm. So I think until we see that much vaunted ramp up, there's not going to be any substantial relaxation of restrictions signaled and very much.
I suppose what I mean, Jack, is that if we were to open up in any significant way, we'd be straight back into the dark part of the woods.
I think that's very much a risk. Yeah, I mean, we have the prevalence of the B.1.1.7 variant is something that people both in the public health side of things and the political side of things point to. You know, we opened up in the start of December at a lower rate with less B.1.1.7, and we saw what happened over the Christmas period. And the fact of the matter is that we're still dealing with that 3-week relaxation of restrictions, and it looks like we'll be dealing with that in terms of a fairly acute and prolonged lockdown through April and likely into at least the middle of May, end of May.
Okay, and on the vaccine supply front, there was some frustration expressed within both parties.
Absolutely. I think that, you know, these parliamentary party meetings are very much a clearinghouse for the foot soldiers of government parties to air grievances that they're getting bubbled up to them from real people, from voters and constituents. And that frustration with the vaccination progress is real and palpable. I think what will compound the frustration, though, is the fact that neither leader was really able to say that, you know, there's a significant ramp up coming anytime soon. And also the messages seem to be that any of the kind of attempts to reverse engineer the process, be that luring pharmaceutical manufacturers to come here and make the vaccines here, or tap up other countries for excess vaccine supplies, they seem to be more or less unsuccessful. Therefore, we are shackled for the time being to the fairly pedestrian process that is the EU vaccination supply chain. And you know, until and as when that kicks up a gear, we can expect to see things trundling along here. And that obviously is frustrating for people who are waiting to see their lives change and waiting to get vaccines into the arm.
Absolutely. Jack, will you stay with us on the line? Because I'm joined also by Dr. Gerald Barry, who's Assistant Professor of Virology at UCD. Good morning to you. Thank you for joining us this morning.
Morning, the
news we're waiting on today is that from the European Medicines Agency, because we expect that they will approve the Johnson & Johnson vaccine today. This can only be good news, even though we know we're not getting what we might have hoped initially, certainly.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the more vaccines that we have access to in the long run, I mean, that's going to make life so much easier for us because, you know, if we have lots of options, then if one drops, like has been happening with AstraZeneca recently, the others will be there to compensate for it. You know, it's great news about the Johnson & Johnson one. The FDA approved it recently as well. It's a very effective vaccine. It's a very clever vaccine. It's only a one-shot vaccine. It doesn't need to be frozen. It can be held in the fridge for long periods of time. It's slightly different to the AstraZeneca one, even though it uses an adenovirus backbone similar to AstraZeneca. They've modified the spike protein slightly to make it more effective and to produce a better immune response, which is why we only need one shot of it. So in the long run, Johnson & Johnson is definitely going to be one that's going to be high up in the priority list to get into the country because, you know, one shot and you're immune after 3 or 4 weeks. You don't have to go back for a second shot. So the quicker that comes on stream, the better, really.
Yeah, and we know we're getting 600,000 of our 2.2 million dose order initially, certainly. We're talking there to Jack about people at the parliamentary party meetings in both Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael saying that they were very there were problems with supply, and clearly we've heard that here as well from both GPs and people who are waiting for their vaccines. Do you think that we are making the best use of the supply that we have?
I mean, we can only go on, I suppose, the data we're seeing. And, you know, based on that, what is it, over 95% of vaccines going into people within 7 days of receiving it. It's, you know, it's difficult to do much better than that. You know, one thing that could be looked at, I suppose, is to try and branch out beyond what the EMA have approved and start to look at maybe accessing vaccines such as Sputnik V from Russia or maybe some of the Chinese-produced vaccines that are showing really high efficacy as well and see if we can get those on stream. You know, like other countries such as Hungary recently signed a deal to get Sputnik V into the country to, again, be really aggressive in kind of ramping up and bringing in as much vaccine as possible.
Jack, from what we heard last night, that's not going to happen, is it? Because as you said, there we're shackled to the EU process.
I don't think so. I think that, look, it is entirely possible that at some stage the Sputnik V vaccine and a Chinese manufactured one may be administered in Ireland, but I think that would only happen after an EMA approval process. And when you talk to senior people in government, they're very, very wary of stepping outside that EMA approval process. They don't rule out perhaps at some stage stepping outside the procurement process, but they say when it comes to regulatory approval, they're only going to follow the EMA. And they're also very wary of the kind of geopolitical element of this as well. They're wary that, you know, perhaps if we were to strike some kind of preemptive deal with another country, the Russians or something like that, we'd get, you know, one big box of vaccines coming in with great fanfare and there would be a big media event and then it might not be followed through on. So I wouldn't imagine that there's a, and in fact, I know there's no enthusiasm in government for stepping out of both processes and striking some bilateral deal like the Hungarians have done.
So that rules that one out, it would seem, Gerald. But we have AstraZeneca. Do you think we should now be using it for the over 70s like so many other countries are?
Oh, yeah, I think so, absolutely. I mean, the data coming out of the UK is very convincing. You know, it's saying 85% of people over the age of 80 are protected completely from symptoms if they get the AstraZeneca vaccine. So the data is very strong to suggest that it should be administered to all age groups at this point. The EMA have recommended that as well, and there's no reason why we shouldn't be doing that.
And we have information as well on the dosing regime, the gaps between the doses, whether a single dose might work. Do you think we could change what we're doing there based on the information?
Yeah, I mean, currently, you know, with AstraZeneca, it's a 12-week interval. Pfizer in Ireland is a 4-week interval. Pfizer in the UK is a 12-week interval. The advantage of the 12-week gap would be that we wouldn't have to hold back vaccine, basically, and we could just get it into as many people as possible with their first dose, because the first dose does give a certain amount of protection already. The problem is, however, is that the UK, with their 12-week gap for the Pfizer vaccine, is going against all recommendations from the manufacturer. And so the evidence just simply doesn't back up what the UK are doing with the Pfizer vaccine. They're in effect taking a kind of a calculated gamble with it. It's difficult to kind of recommend that when the actual manufacturer of the product, you know,
so we should
say
stick,
that we should do that.
We should stick
so I think
to
we
the
need
plan.
To what we're doing. Yeah, unfortunately, I think we should, because that's what the evidence says works. Anything else would be a guess, effectively, and a massive gamble. It might turn out to be right, but at the moment, it's hard to back it. because the evidence just doesn't support it at the moment.
And we know that the reopening of the country is dependent on the successful rollout of the vaccine. So nothing can really happen until more people are vaccinated, Gerald.
Yeah, unfortunately, that's the case. Yeah, I mean, NPHE came out with guidance yesterday as well, saying that they want to have all vulnerable groups vaccinated before, you know, they want to consider opening up the country completely. And I think that makes sense, unfortunately. And this is why we're so anxious, I suppose, to get everyone vaccinated as quickly as possible, because vaccines are a way out of this whole problem. And the quicker we can get vulnerable groups and the vast majority of the rest of the population vaccinated, the better. Because opening up before that, you know, it just runs the risk of cases going back up, as we're seeing in numerous countries across Europe at the moment.
Yeah, and we know there are some situations that are just really difficult for people, Jack, and funeral services were raised last night as well.
Yes, indeed. And I think that this is one of the parts of restrictions where you might expect to see quite a bit of pushback coming in the next little while. There's a limit at the moment of 10 people attending funeral masses, and at the Fine Gael parliamentary party, two ministers of state, Martin Hayden and Josepha Madigan, both raised this issue. And I think there is a general sense in the wider population, and certainly among the Catholic hierarchy, who raised this as well during the week, that these restrictions are kind of cruel and unusual, and risk kind of adding another layer of trauma for people at a time when they've obviously lost someone close. So there will be, I think, a push perhaps to revisit and alter those. I don't see it happening in the near term. I think if it is something that comes onto the pitch, it may come onto the pitch around April 5th, but I wouldn't be placing any massive money on it, because really the message from government at the moment is that it'll be slow and steady. It'll be schools between now and April 5th, and then it'll be construction, the 5K limit, and some relaxation on further outdoor activities, and anything else beyond that will be extremely marginal. So added bonuses, I think, will be thin on the ground.
Gerald, would you be against bigger funerals, even if it was 25 people?
I think it's a really difficult one because, you know, we have huge spaces in Ireland. We have huge churches, you know, in a lot of towns and villages across the country. And so one could definitely make the case that putting a larger number of people in a church for a funeral would be perfectly acceptable. I think that the problem is beyond the church service and the potential that if you had 50 or 25 or 50 people in the church, the temptation then is to go as a group somewhere else to, I suppose, continue the funeral and the commiserations with the family or whoever might be involved. And that's where the problem arises. We know already that, you know, large outbreaks have been caused by big gatherings in and around funeral events. And so I think, you know, there would be a reluctance to loosen it simply because not necessarily of what might happen in the church, but what might happen outside of it and beyond the church service itself.
All right, we'll leave it there for now. Dr. Gerald Barry, thank you for joining us, and Jack Horgan-Jones from the Irish Times. Let's take a quick break.